right. Well, that's good.
All right. So that, starting again.
Take two.
Take two. Hi, welcome to the podcast. Hello, welcome to the Contendo podcast. I'm your host, Ishmael LaValle. And right now my guest is Sandin Killoran.
Hey, how's it going, Ish?
Going pretty good.
You definitely got to leave that last take and a half in there, because I think that just that kind of showcases how we live here.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, actually, we had another take before that where...
It was going really well.
Going super well.
I think there might have even been some valuable insights there, but...
But it's all gone because I forgot to press record.
Awesome.
So, Sandin, can you give us a small rundown of how we started here at Contendo and how the company started?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think... You know, the idea between the podcast is kind of to share the experiences that we as a company have had, you know, being a company in that's located in northern New Brunswick and Calgary, and, you know, trying to split our time and make products here that apply to the world. So, you know, origin story is probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we were founded in 2008. It's definitely a Trumpian affair where my dad started the company. But he has his own company called Sancon Commissioning, and they are leaders in Alberta's oil and gas sector and starting up new facilities and stuff like that. So one of the big things that was happening in the late 2000s was that they were being asked to stick around and train people coming into the plant to operate it. Now, when oil was at $130 a barrel and the price disparity and all those things that we hear about in the news today weren't happening, you know, that wasn't as sweet of an alternative for Sancon. They needed to get to the next plant, the next billion-dollar facility that was going up, and they were going up very quickly.
Yeah.
But, you know, we understood that there would be a knowledge loss by these contractors leaving, so... In order to kind of satisfy the client and seeing an opportunity, Dennis partnered with a web development firm out of Bathurst and built their first site-specific course for ConocoPhillips for
Sermon 1. That was the one with Mike.
That was Mike and Josh. Our Mike Goyette and Josh Gammon owned a company called Web Solutions in Bathurst. Ownership's changed there a little bit too since then. It's just kind of Josh's company now, but they came in with a guy named RJ Forbes. Out of Moncton, who was animating advertising and stuff like that and different web products. I think RJ has moved on to mobile games since then. And anyway, they got together, and between the five of them, Dennis writing and using design documentation and P&IDs and blueprints, they were able to put together the Sermont 1 training package. And I think to date that those modules have run over 250,000 times. They had 20,000 users go through it, at least completing, I think the minimum was 3 modules, and those modules could be anywhere from 20 to minutes to an hour and a half. And so it was viewed largely as a success for ConocoPhillips. And after that, subsequently, we did probably another 400 modules for companies like Devon and Pengrowth.
And some of them were a lot longer than 20 minutes.
Yeah, some of them were, I would say, painfully long, is because I'm not a power engineer, but...
No, yeah. Some of them were over an hour long.
Yeah.
Like, that's painfully long for anyone to just listen to, like, narration and see gray.
So, I mean, I guess at our peak, we were probably 12 digital production artists in the house.
Yeah.
Just working on that, like, 3 animators... 2 technical writers usually going most of the time.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't
qualify. 2 graphic designers.
Yeah. It was 2 animators, because it was me and Billy.
Well, Jesse started as an animator too.
Oh, he started as an animator too. Okay.
Yeah. I think when he first came, when you would have left, he was still an animator. He went off, and so our lead developer started off as an animator.
I mean, that makes sense, because, like, the animation was mostly programming based, and it was like his action script, so that's basically just a crappier version of JavaScript. So it made sense that Jesse would have
that a programmer could do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I guess apologies all around. I mean, maybe we'll put it up as bonus features, the poor audio recording of our conversation of the rise and fall of Flash. But
yeah,
that's what we built all of our courseware in the beginning. And, you know, unfortunately, it kind of just became obsolete. You know, you have to kind of manually turn it on now on your browser. And, you know, HTML5 is probably finally caught up to the processing capability, though I still think the user the responsibility put on the user to maintain the memory, like the size of those files, is still very considerable for HTML5 files.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's what it is. What Steve Jobs says goes, and you know, he's still haunting us from beyond the grave.
But I mean, there's still some sites that still use Flash, like Newgrounds, for example.
He's
still big on Flash.
You look at any of the like Canadian broadcasting websites, like say CTV, TSN, Sportsnet. You know, like if you're watching television clips or whatever, a lot of them are still using kind of that Microsoft Silverlight plugin derivation.
God, I haven't heard of Silverlight like in the longest time. I remember when Netflix kept asking to like
update your Silverlight.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's not necessarily called that anymore, but you can see it. You can see it still in play. Like you'll still have to turn on your Flash player. Like, if I want to watch games on NHL.com, I have to turn on the Flash player on my computer. So,
yeah.
But what are they? They've been forecasting the death of it for 3 years now. So now you have to turn it on. Now it's going away. Yeah. Long story short, we had to pivot. We moved to a different format. We're using we tried a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Trying to recreate the power of that animation tool has been challenging. Most of that is light on your shoulders of trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, that all started basically whenever we decided to make our safety courses. Whenever we started making Wemyss, we wanted a character that like walked around and basically got blown up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
Or poisoned. Yeah, we also poisoned him.
Poisoned him. Caught him on fire.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I was trying to get away from Flash because I absolutely hated Flash with a passion. And I always wanted to work in After Effects. So I came to you with that like vision of like, you know what, there's actually plugins out there that can make what it is that you're...
That we've been doing for years, yeah.
And I can make also that character move around, and I think it would be much easier. And so you just told me like, okay, well, build me a demo. So that we can, you know, so I have something to present to Dennis,
yeah,
to convince him to like move forward with this. And I spent a lot of my hours even at home like trying to figure stuff out and trying to make it a reality. And we finally did. We moved on to After Effects, no longer using Flash. And that's one of the big ways that we've updated.
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, it's empowered us to put it into different containers too, even for testing. And, you know, our course delivery platforms have been, you know, improved so much just because we're embedding video instead of, you know, launching big Flash players and heavy duty Flash players. So, I mean, you know, that's been a huge part, and you guys drove that, you know, all the way. I kind of just said, this is what I want to see. which, you know, works out. You know, I don't have any formal background in all of that stuff, but I've, you know, hung around smart people long enough to know a little bit of what I'm talking about. But I think the big part is the internet and the culture amongst creative people in the internet between 2008 and I would say 2015 completely shifted. Mm-hmm. Like, dealing with RJ in the beginning, RJ Forbes was the guy who built our original Flash containers. Great, talented guy, really fun to work with and stuff like that. But he was very protective of his proprietary code.
Yeah.
Right? And you saw in, I would say almost as soon as like 2010 hit, there was a really big shift away from that. you know, that kind of the idea of open source and free to the world and free to learn really took hold, which is, you know, honestly, when I came back to work here after going to Edmonton for a few years, was kind of, and really getting exposed to that whole open culture was kind of what I really enjoy about, and still to this day enjoy about this company and about the idea of making e-learning products, amongst other things that we do. But, you know, it was really about, holy crap, we can open up basically the, there's a world of education out there. Like, yeah, coding is going to be the, you know, math of the next century and a half.
Yeah.
And you don't need to go to university to learn how to code.
Oh, no.
The best coders don't.
No.
Like, and the best coders who go to university generally drop out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I took coding in, I took college and it, I took coding in college as well. And I don't code anymore.
Well, and the big thing is even if you did, you can't stop learning, right? Because it's always expanding.
And the thing is that you can't stop coding if you start to learn how to code. Otherwise, you just lose it.
It's a language like anything else, right?
I mean, I can look at a page and look at a page of coding, and I can kind of like get some bits and pieces and kind of know what I'm looking at. But if you ask me to code something, I'd be like, no.
Yeah, yeah. It's a learn by doing thing. I think some people learn better in structured, formalized environments. So, I mean, I think there'll always be a place for, you know, computer science bachelor degrees and colleges that teach these things. But ultimately, I think there needs to be a really frank and honest conversation about what lifelong learning means in this industry.
Yeah.
If you want to see more people pick up this skill, if you want to see more careers, and really, I mean, today's economy isn't really built on manual input anymore. It's machine learning, it's AI, it's being able to converse with code and machines and
big time.
And at least having an understanding of how that works. You don't necessarily have to code it yourself, but you should be able to understand what the hierarchy of how these systems operate is. And, you know, that's a big thing that I don't think a lot of jurisdictions are doing, including New Brunswick or Alberta. Alberta's a little bit further ahead of it, but it's driven by industry, which is kind of where we've always seen our opportunities as a company. But it's why I like Contendo, right? We're nestled up here. We've got this little old Forest Ranger station that we converted into an office, and you know, we're building high tech stuff in a community where the average age is 62. So,
yeah, that's
it's fun anyway.
But I mean, also like being around here, it's. I mean, I've seen it myself. It's hard to keep people in that industry around here to work in, like, to work for a company like us.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. I think one of our biggest challenges has always been attracting and maintaining people. I know, and not just for us. I mean, good people with the aging, and everybody around here is feeling it. Like, we have a client that runs a facility not too far away from here, and they have a staff of about 300 or 300 people on site. You know, they're looking at, you know, over half of that, those employees retiring in the next 5 to 10 years. Mm. So there's going to be huge knowledge loss as well. And that's if they can replace them, that all they're worried about is knowledge loss. Yeah. So, I mean, but especially in tech and in emerging industries and stuff like that, it is significantly more stressful, but I mean, it's a problem everybody faces. I think the thing is that being a coder or being a digital production specialist, it empowers you so much in so many markets that, you know, you have to work really hard to attract someone. Like, we had one kid who I thought we were going to hold on to forever. Shouts out to Jordan. But ultimately, you know, we bring in kids in their first jobs, and we were maybe able to hold on to them for a year. But,
well, I mean, we even had that intern.
Yeah, we had two interns, yeah. And we couldn't keep them.
Two interns?
Yeah, yeah. No, there was a programmer kid. Yeah.
Right. I didn't remember.
He was a decent developer. I don't know if his attitude was exactly what we were looking for, but he was a good coder. But I mean, ultimately, it empowers that person to be able to kind of say, well, I want to live in this city, right? You know, I like the culture and the ideas here. I'll go there and I will find a job because, you know, it's just that in demand. Yeah. And, you know, I took 4 years and came out with a bachelor's degree in history and English. And I could not say the same, right?
Yeah.
So, there, I mean, it's a huge thing.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's the thing, too. Like, for a lot of, like, people say, like you said, like, people want to live where they want to live. And yeah. trying to find a job in that field, in that area, I mean, especially for tech and stuff in small towns, it's hard to find. And, like, even myself, I left for a little bit. I went to Moncton for a little bit, thinking like, oh, okay, there's yeah. probably more jobs up there. But the thing is that there's jobs wherever you go. You just yeah. have to find them.
Yeah. And well, and I think, you know, to tag on to that piece, I mean, it's not a, like, we have two offices, one here and one in Calgary, and Calgary is more of a sales and support office, as well as it's shared with our parent company. But you know, the big thing I would say is that not so much like you leaving from here to go to Moncton, because you still did a lot of work for us when you were in Moncton.
Yeah, I did.
You know, remote work is becoming a really, you know, pivotal part of our business model because it's just we understand. But like New Brunswick as a whole has a really hard time holding on to these people. Like Frederick, the last government invested millions upon millions of dollars in turning Fredericton into this cybersecurity center of excellence, right? They're paying the taxes for our employment taxes for companies like IBM and Siemens and all this stuff. Right?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so they're there for up in the Knowledge Park. It's just on top of Regent Hill in Fredericton. It's awesome. You've got Salesforce, you've got IBM, you've got Siemens, you've got TD, like all these big insurance, you know, IT sectors for either big financial institutions or tech companies. So we're paying a lot of money to keep them there, but they're still screaming for people. Right, because it's still, you know, the personality type and stuff like that, it really lends itself to, you know, I want to be in a big cultural center, like a hub. And mm-hmm. it's, I don't know if it's ever, if the wave's ever going to crest and break back down, right? Because you bought a house.
Yeah.
Right? For not a huge amount of money.
No, it was barely nothing.
Yeah, and if you look at when I was living in Edmonton and I was working at an agency, it was a lot of fun working at an agency, working with big brands and stuff like that and doing digital marketing on a large scale. But it was, you know, ultimately it was going to be $500,000 to buy a house.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was
half the size of the one that I bought for 100.
Yeah, that was one of the big reasons why I came back down here, was actually because I'm like, I want to buy a house.
Yeah.
And yeah, Moncton would have been way more expensive. Like basically the person I was living with, they spent $90,000 on theirs. Yeah. They got a pretty good price for it.
Yeah.
But like it was just like a classic bungalow, like nothing real special. And I got that for like almost half the price.
Yeah.
Well, in Hamilton, it's a way, like, it's way better.
Yeah, and I think, you know, hopefully at some point the housing bubble, like one of two things is going to happen. Either the housing bubble bursts in the rest of Canada and houses become more affordable in those cities, which means we'll never see anybody again, or yeah. people are going to realize that they can live probably a more affordable life in the country or the rural areas. Mm-hmm. And you know, if enough people come here, you kind of just dictate, you change the culture to match, right?
But I mean, there's also the other part of it where like our older population is starting to dissipate a bit, like starting to retire.
Okay, retire.
Retire. No,
not dissipate. I'm like, okay, that's a really nice way of saying die off.
That sounded dark. Just in the workplace.
Yeah.
So now there's starting to be more room for like more modern solutions and like more modern thinking in the workplace.
Yeah.
So we might start seeing a bit more tech in our region.
Yeah, I hope so. I think one of the things that's kind of held, you know, the older parts of Canada back is that rely on more traditional industries is kind of that, you know, that balancing act between bringing in modernization, which usually means automation and can mean loss of like, you know, work boots and hard hat types jobs. At the same time, you know, not modernizing the industry will do that. Will kind of cripples you, because then you're not getting the new jobs and you're not as able to compete as places that don't, or sorry, that do innovate and modernize. So, I mean, it's a balancing act, right? And I think, you know, you reach a point of no return where you reach the cliff, basically, where you have to dive headfirst into it. Now, there is not going to be a slow uptake for these modernizations and automation pieces. You look at a company like MB Power, you know, they're going to lose half their workforce or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got to find different ways to compete. It's going to go, there, you know, you're going to see companies like IBM come in and like just completely change the way those companies operate.
So
a big challenge that we faced a couple years ago, and we can cut around that last conversation, but a big,
I mean, I don't know, it was pretty insightful. I think people will find it interesting.
Sure. All right, cool. Big challenge for us in 2013. Well, I wasn't here in 2013, but I came back in 2015.
That 2013 is when I arrived.
Yeah, 2013 times were still good. So in about the end of 2014, the price of oil started to drop. And we designed products for business-to-business sales of customized training solutions that would take about anywhere between 10 and 20,000 man hours to complete. So retrospect, you know, that's the better part of $500,000 to $1 million, as far as cost. Unfortunately, one of the things that when economic times get tough for an industry, one of the first things they do is they cut training. Training is something that is nice to have. You don't necessarily need to do unless it's legislated. And competency training, which was actually, we were Contendo Competency Training Solutions. It was definitely our bread and butter, and it was definitely probably the first thing on the chopping block if there was companies considering our products. So happy to say that we were able to maintain most of our clients that were with us, but there wasn't many new ones on the horizon, so we had to kind of pivot. And so we went towards safety training, online safety training. Of course, we realized very quickly that ocean was already full of a lot of very hungry and aggressive sharks. I still think our safety training is better than the majority of them.
I think so too.
Yeah, it's a little more entertaining. It's faster. We're definitely designing courseware for people who, you know, we're not underestimating the intelligence of the viewer.
Yeah.
Right. I think some of the curses of the safety training that's out there is that they want to spell it out to you, and I understand why they want to do that, but they kind of underestimate the intelligence of the viewer, or the fact that they've taken this 30 times already. They just need to get the new legislation and get out of it. So we were able to do that. So it's short. We made it cheap because after all those years of building highly complex animations, we were able to do that really, really well and really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're priced competitively, but again, it is a big market. And Contendo, you know, with all our business-to-business clients and the fact that a project would take about a year, I don't think we developed our market the way our brand and our market in the space as well as we could have when times were good. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
when times were bad, that became a very, very large uphill battle, one that we're still kind of fighting, right? Where this, you know, Sisyphus pushing the globe up the rock up the mountain. It's ever, for every company, it's always ongoing, but the rock would have been a lot smaller in, say, 2012 than it is now.
Definitely.
I don't know. I got a question for you then. I mean,
sure.
We've kind of changed the nature of our work, and, you know, we're trying to, you know, effectively switch up our culture to match more of a company. I don't know. I wouldn't say necessarily from a bigger center, but definitely match more, be more in line with a tech company than, say, what I think our processes were before. We were more like, we worked more like an oil company or a service company, right?
No, I remember even like the flow charts that we had for like our process.
Yeah.
I mean, on certain things, I think that back when we were doing stuff for like pen growth and stuff, the whole process was a lot more clearly laid out.
Yeah.
But now that we're starting to like venture in other stuff, it's a lot of like figuring it out. We're in the process of kind of building our own process for things.
Yeah.
So they, in that sense, it's a little bit more challenging, but it's more exciting than what we used to do with
their
old style of animation.
I think even just the nature of the product of what we were building, I mean, it really kind of boiled down to, you know, this is how it goes. We'll move through each system. We'll do it like this, you know, A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. And you find out really quickly when you no longer have that kind of steady work in a very traditional industry and you're trying to create your own market or break into a market that you have to find a creative way to do it. And...
Well, the thing is that all the projects that we used to have, it was all the same...
Yeah.
Same format, the same recipe.
Yeah.
Every time. So it was easy to like deal with that. Yeah. But now, I mean, we're getting into a lot of different projects now. So it isn't as simple as like, oh, here's the recipe to do it. And boom, boom, boom. We need this first, this, that, this, this. But I think we had like some major growing pains whenever we started switching from that.
Yeah.
Whenever we started building the the safety courses, it was a bit of a challenge to like decide, okay, what do we need first? What do we do first? And like, I think like we had a conversation at one point where I was like, if we're going to do these things, like we need to do certain things in order because
yeah,
we're going to lose time. We're going to waste time.
Yeah. And I think we didn't approach it the right way in the sense that I was asking the staff, basically when I came back and took over, I was asking the staff to, you know, be more creative, be more innovative and stuff like that. But still, I was expecting to be able to be as hands-off as we were when we were doing the, you know, I wouldn't call the site-specific cookie cutter, but it was very linear, right? Mm-hmm. It was a very linear thing. So we didn't... What should have been like a page one rewrite in our processes, like a complete overhaul from the beginning, we tried to do in kind of a phased approach. And I wouldn't even say it ended up being a phased approach because I would still say to this day, we're not done. Like one of the things that we're really focusing on in 2019 is the idea of more check-ins, more, you know, more short deliverables, kind of more agile style development. So we're not working in a silo for a month, build something and then realize, oh shit, that should have been there.
Yeah. Well, no, I actually really like this new direction that we've been taking lately into, like you said, doing like sprints.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more, there's a lot more accountability. There's a lot more clearness in where we're heading.
Yeah.
So that way, if we're not heading the right direction, it can be,
you know, a lot sooner. Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 That's kind of the point is, you know, when you're creating something new, you know, read the startup handbook, like any startup handbook, and they'll start, or the lean playbook or the lean production playbook and stuff like that. There's a lot of them. I'll throw Ish the links so you can put them below. But I think it's a matter of, you know, understanding that when you're trying to create something new, you're going to be wrong. You're going to make mistakes a lot along the way. And it's a lot cheaper and more productive for the company if you are checking in more regularly and catching them, right?
Yeah.
Again, you know, we had the conversation about keeping staff here. It's tough when in a small business like ours, when everybody's pulling double duty. Right.
Yeah.
You're a graphic designer. You're our animator for all of those projects. You're also handling all this stuff for business development so that we have a social media presence, that we move products. Right. I'm the project manager on a lot of projects. but I'm also a huge business development. I'm the one who's going to go and make presentations to a lot of our, you know, bigger opportunities. So I'm pulling that double duty.
And now we're like getting into a whole app design and stuff. So
yeah, now we're doing app design. So there's learning and stuff. And yeah, so yeah. I mean, it becomes incredibly challenging, but I think it's just, you know, you have to put those pieces here in order to really develop that culture of, you know, not only holding yourself accountable, but being willing to hold you, like you hold me accountable, I hold you accountable.
Yeah.
And, you know, the understanding that, well, this isn't done to be mean to you.
No.
This is, you know, for the betterment of the team. And, you know, today we finished our first week of blocks. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about, maybe that's probably a good podcast topic someday.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But yeah, no, definitely.
But yeah, and then we're going over the, you know, the results, right?
Yeah. No, but the thing is even like this whole thing, it's more encouraging to know that somebody's like there beside you,
mm-hmm.
to like check in to see like, okay, where are you at on this? Where, like, are you struggling with anything or yeah. do you need anything? So yeah, no, I completely agree. It's not to be mean. It's actually just more encouraging. Anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's generally, I found that, you know, when things go kind of awry in the office here and as a small business, you know, if we're working in a silo, we kind of give ourselves the benefit of the doubt that we're doing the right thing and we're working. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if I can't figure out, nobody else can figure it out, especially in small businesses where one guy has one set of skills. That's amazing the times that, like, you know, Mike or Jesse will bring something to me and, you know, I'm not a coder, but I can say, oh, you're looking for functionality that runs like this program.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is, I've actually encountered something like this. That's what it looks like. And I can point them in that direction. They see it and they, you know, they inspect the elements and the running code and they're like, oh, that's it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now it's always interesting how a lot of people, like most of the time, a lot of people, they think, oh, I don't work in this field. I don't know anything about this field. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that even though you don't work in this field, you might work with some stuff that is a product.
Yeah.
Of that field. So you do know something about it and there's always an insight to be had somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now we're running two concurrent projects while we're building a new piece of software for the parent company. And one of the projects is actually populating that piece of software. But the amazing thing that's happening right now is that basically it's live user testing, right?
Yeah.
So that feedback's going right back to the developer as he builds. And, you know, the product is, I would say that the product scope from, you know, our developer building it alone, which would have been like this, like the trajectory is now, you know, flying, right?
Yeah, exponential.
Yeah, he's getting rapid, instant feedback. You know, it's not negative. It's more like I'm using it as an end user would use it. You know, I really think it should do this. And before it's built and, you know, you have time to baby it and it becomes your child, you can change it, right? So it's easier to do that way.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
I think that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much close to our time there. So, like, basically, that right now, we want to talk like a little bit about our aspirations.
Sure.
In the next few months. I mean,
we're
starting on the whole app development.
Yeah,
on,
that's going to be something cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, the work wallet that's coming out. You know, we're reconfiguring one of our flagship pieces of software to be, you know, better offering to individual our contractors or small businesses. And when I say small businesses, I don't mean 25 to 100 or 100 to 200. I mean, like, you know, the individual contractor who's got a, you know, a welding ring at the back of his truck and gets out there at minus 45. And it was almost that cold this morning. But yeah, no, I think I'm really excited about the way that that's going. But I think, you know, aspirational wise, you know, this podcast, I mean, this is episode one.
Yeah, that's yeah. The aspirations right there.
Yeah, you've got you kind of get a sense of Contendo, I hope, from the conversation. And, you know, I think Ish, you'll bring us through. We'll talk to different members of the team, mm-hmm. I'm assuming.
And, I don't know about Kevin, but...
yeah, maybe not Kevin.
I know Pete. Any problem. I'll just say two words and then...
Yeah,
I won't have to say anything else after that.
Yeah, we'll bring Pete up. Mike LaPointe, maybe we can go foraging with Mike LaPointe.
Yeah.
We'll have to go down to Vegas. If this takes off and we make some money, we'll all go down to Vegas and Jesse can
definitely
can do a road trip with us. No, I think there's a lot of unique challenges to being a small business in a small market and trying to play with the big boys. And, you know, I think it's kind of universal for those companies that are, you know, I've been saying it for the last 2 years, you know, we have to run like a startup. You know, we have to run like a company that's still trying to get its feet under. You know, we're very, you know, blessed to have a parent company who keeps us, you know, going with a lot of work. But, you know, we're really still trying to define our identity. And I think, you know, that's really indicative of a lot of companies that are, you know, they're making ends meet. They're getting by.
Yeah.
But in order to really take that next step, you really have to know who you are, do the things that fit that. And, you know, be able to share that with, you know, people in the world so that they can, you know, connect with it and say, oh, yeah, I want to work with these guys. Because, I mean, the best clients we have are clients who, you know, we're building custom stuff for, because I think our biggest value is that we work really well with companies and organizations that have like that aspirational goal to become a lot more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to help you do that with technology and stuff like that. We'll create custom software programs to make your life easier or make you a bit more efficient or help you deliver better services to your, or help you train your employees better, right? That's been the whole, it took a long time to distill that.
Yeah.
But that's been the whole gist of Contendo for a long time. And it comes from what, it really comes from innately from what we want for ourselves, is that we want to become more. We want to become, you know, that brand, for lack of a better term, that kind of says, you know, we're scrappy, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, I think the podcast will do a lot to, you know, help people get to know us and hopefully see a little bit of themselves and the challenges that we're going through.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, man. And congrats for putting this all together.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, man.
Some good last words for our podcast. This was the Contendo podcast with me, Ishmael Lavallee, and
Sandy Corn. Guest number one.
Guest number one.
All right.